The film which you are about to see is an account of the tragedy which befell a group of five youths, in particular, Sally Hardesty and her invalid brother, Franklin. It is all the more tragic in that they were young. But had they lived very, very long lives, they could not have expected, nor would they have wished to see as much of the mad and macabre as they were to see that day. For them, an idyllic summer afternoon drive became a nightmare. The events of that day were to lead to the discovery of one of the most bizarre crimes in the annals of American history, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I'm your host, Jason Bishop, and joining me in the torture chamber today is Trish Coughlin.
Hey!
And the meat grinder himself, Sam Stepanenko.
I am so looking forward to eating you.
Ooh. And of course, we're preparing this feast for our birthday guest today. Welcome back to the show, Jeff Robertson.
Yay. The secret's in the meat.
I can't believe you chose to be on a podcast to talk about Chainsaw Massacre on your birthday rather than do anything else.
Well, Texas Chainsaw, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original one, is probably one of my top five favorite movies ever.
Nice.
So, wow. I really, really love that movie. So I would love to talk about it on my birthday. It sounds it's a great thing to do.
But now I'm like going, okay, it's a good movie, but at the same time, I'm like, what does this say about you?
You wouldn't have to be vegan or vegetarian, would you?
So my wife is vegan.
There we go.
I eat pretty much whatever. Mostly
sorry,
vegan.
I was looking for the connection. I guess I wasn't there yet.
Sorry, if this is one of your top five... And Trish is already making some mental judgments about you. What are the other four?
Yeah.
Off the top of my head, if I was to choose four other movies that would be in my top five, I would say probably The Master by Paul Thomas Anderson, starring Joaquin Phoenix. I would say Hobo with a Shotgun by Jason Eisner. I would say, what would the other two be? That's tough. I think the other two are on constant rotation, but a lot of times I would say In the Mouth of Madness by John Carpenter.
Going back to last week, good job.
Uh-huh. Nice. Yeah,
it's a great movie. And for the coveted fifth spot, that's one for some contemplation. But those four are usually ones that are always in there.
Okay. Well, I think that's Trish was right in her judgment.
That's a vivid picture.
Especially with Hobo and the Shotgun being on that list.
Yeah, and it's like all of those are you know, really... like genre movies, and then there's The Master, which is unlike the rest of them in every way possible.
Yes, so. Absolutely.
See, but I'm looking at The Master, and I'm like, you know what? I would like to see a crossover, like just in the middle of The Master, Hobo with a Shotgun just shows up.
that would be
brilliant.
You could make a pretty good movie that's a combo of Scientology, war veteran, and grindhouse slasher, I imagine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty sure, what is it called? Vanishing Point? Is that the one where the guy comes back from the war and some people rob his house and then shove his hand down a carburetor? Then he teams up with Tommy Lee Jones for revenge.
I thought Vanishing Point was a car movie.
Yes,
well, I'm sure. But there might be more than one. You know, in the comments, what the title of the movie I'm thinking of is.
Yeah, well, usually our listeners are like screaming at their whatever they're listening to, their devices, going, "Ah, you guys are driving me nuts." Halftime, we'll remember during the show. Halftime,
like, why'd you bring on this guest? He doesn't even know what he's talking about.
Yeah, well,
or I'll get a text like 4 hours later. Jay's editing and going, "It's this."
Yes.
Yep.
And, you know, we don't have to know about the movies we're not talking about today. We only have to know about the one we are. And even then, it's iffy.
Our filing cabinets are pretty full. You think about how many episodes we've done, how many movies we've watched, And we can only retain so much information, guys.
I can barely retain 5 minutes after the podcast.
Well, every time we come back, and I know I should do this and I should look into this, but you're like going, oh, what? When did we cover on this episode? I'm like, how would I know that?
Well, it'll come up today.
Yeah, and I didn't do my research today. So,
you know, every time I'm on an episode, I do a lot of research. I feel like I did moderately less research on this topic, but it's because I feel like maybe I was more comfortable with my general knowledge of the subject matter. However, that's also a trap because you can feel like you know a lot about something and not be fresh on any of the information.
It's true. Mm-hmm. I have a really nice Blu-ray restoration of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and the only special features on there were like four commentaries, and I'm like, I don't want to watch this movie four more times.
I believe on YouTube or on Vimeo, there are two or three really good documentaries about Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I believe there's two or three main ones. They're very good if you haven't seen them.
All right. Well, we are talking about Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Whoops.
Well, I think we've dropped the title a couple of times. Mm. We're talking about Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 1974 and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 2003. Now, you can argue that several others are also remakes, and this is a franchise very guilty of recycling its material over and over and over again. I mean, initially 1974, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and we wouldn't see it again until 1986, like way late into the slasher phase. Yeah. And that was followed by Leatherface, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3 in 1990.
Underrated.
The not underrated at all Texas Chainsaw Massacre The Next Generation, which was pretty freaking terrible in 1994, which is very remakey as well, but we're not going to cover. We're just going to cover the two called The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Of course, the remake from 2003 reboots the franchise. Then they did a prequel to that in 2006, which was essentially the same movie. And then they decided, fuck it, fuck the reboot stuff, let's go back to the well. There was 13 years between the first two movies. We can tell some stories in between. And then that was 2013's Texas Chainsaw 3D and last year's Leatherface, which actually is a prequel to the original film with a teenage Leatherface, because that's what everybody was clamoring for.
You know what's kind of interesting?
No, can you hear me shake my head? No.
I think horror movie chronologies for long-running franchises are always interesting to contemplate the various timelines. And with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, there is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, 1974, followed by 2, followed by 3, followed by 4. That's the first one. Mm-hmm. Then the two reboots, the reboot and the prequel. And then, as you said, there is Texas Chainsaw 3D, and I found out that Leatherface exists within a chronology, the latest one, of Leatherface, the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, then Texas Chainsaw 3D, and that's a trilogy now.
Yeah, the last two are in the continuity of the original series.
Yeah.
And they're doing that shit with Halloween now. We've had the Rob Zombie reboots, and now we're going back to the John Carpenter stuff, and I don't know if that wipes out any of the other ones or not.
It wipes them all out except for the first one.
Yep.
Crazy, confusing, but I guess the Japanese going, we have three different continuities for Godzilla. Screw you guys.
Yeah.
And possibly four now. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll probably get to this later, but I'm curious. How would you rank all of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies off the bat?
Well, I haven't seen them all, so I can't really judge. I haven't seen the last two, Texas Chainsaw 3D or Leatherface, from just earlier this year, last year. So out of the ones I've seen, the worst is Texas Chainsaw Massacre The Next Generation.
You bet.
Ironically, the first one I ever saw. Which I'm sure did
nothing. I'm surprised
nothing.
You saw any more of them after that.
Well, we watched it together.
Yes, we did.
Which was funny. And jump-starting Renee Zellweger's career.
Yeah, and Matthew McConaughey.
No.
And number three was Viggo Mortensen.
That was a cash grab after they did this years before.
Yeah, yeah.
It didn't jump-start anybody.
No, they were capitalizing. The movie never got a theatrical release.
It was jump-started in the fact that they were hired.
Yeah, they knew it was a dog and had it kept it on the shelf. And, I mean, they weren't even close to making their budget back on that movie.
No. So who here has seen all of the Texas Chainsaw movies?
Not me.
Oh, it's only
Sorry.
Me.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah. Well,
it's only the last two, the 3D and the Leatherface, that I haven't seen now.
You know what? A lot of people give flack to 3D, but I mean, in my ranking, at number four in my ranking, I didn't think it was too bad. I thought it was better than the remakes and the prequels. And yeah, it's
you're
not too
wrong.
Bad at all.
You're wrong. Your top four movies prove you to be wrong.
Yeah, no, I, of all of them, the original is still the best.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm going to say that now, because let's face it, it is the best. But yeah, I really enjoyed the ones from the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, admittedly, I haven't seen them in a long time, so I don't know if they stand up to my current standards, but they were a lot of fun. And they were almost tongue-in-cheek to me.
Yeah, the second one for sure.
Yeah, I mean, when you get Dennis Hopper involved in anything.
Yeah.
Well, all I remember is the poster for it where they're posing like the Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
That's what really resonates. I don't remember much about... I think I've seen two, but I don't remember much about the movie at all. I just remember that image.
Well, two is where they introduced Chop Top, right? Because I remember really liking that movie. It had a very different tongue-in-cheek kind of tone to it. I remember really being taken by that film.
I actually feel like Texas Chainsaw 2, in a lot of ways, is... to the original Texas Chainsaw as Evil Dead 2 is to the original Evil Dead.
Yes. I agree.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that, actually.
All right. Well, here's the boring statistics for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 1974. Certain people in the room are chomping at the bit for this.
I have some thoughts. And I know that my information is not complete, but I just want to point something out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, the story and screenplay was by Kim Henkel, and... the director and screenplay was also written and directed by Tobe Hooper, who we covered in... oh, for God's sakes, people.
The Poltergeist one.
Thank you, Sam.
Also,
episode 109.
As soon as you point to me, I blank.
Say his name is Tobe Hooper. Is it Tobe or Toby?
Well, it's T-O-B-E, so I'm going to say it that way.
Oh, I always thought it was Toby.
I've heard it said both ways.
I've heard it both ways, and I kind of prefer Tobe.
It's unique. For a very unique individual.
But I don't know. Yeah. I don't know him personally, so...
and unfortunately,
at this
you
point,
won't.
Yeah. He can't tell me.
I go with Toby.
If he can't correct me, I'm right.
I go with Toby because I'm like, I'm less afraid with somebody called Toby.
Yeah.
I am definitely afraid of Tobe.
Yeah, Tobe seems scary, but Toby, I'm okay with.
Yeah, and we lost Toby / Tobe. This past year, so feels right to do this movie and talk about where his career began. This movie stars Marilyn Burns, Edwin Neal. Edwin, who equated filming this to something worse than Vietnam, in which he served.
Yes, that's
so
a lot.
That doesn't sound like this was a fun film shoot. Alan Danziger, Paul A. Partain, William Vale, Terry McKinn, Jim Sydow,
actually
Gunnar Hansen, of course.
Jim Sydow and Gunnar Hansen, I really feel like they bring it in this movie.
Yeah, Gunnar really brings a lot to what makes Leatherface an actual character.
Yeah.
I think he's the one who really fleshed out that character, and I think he was given a lot of freedom for it. John Dugan, who had to endure horrible grandfather makeup, and they had to shoot it within 36 hours because he refused to get back into it, and must have smelt of all sorts of smells.
Oh, the smells on this movie. If you look at all the trivia, it's about the smells.
Yeah. It is. The coolest it was at night around 80 degrees, and
which was
over 100 during the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Texas.
In Texas.
With real raw rotting flesh on set.
Yeah.
Yes.
And their budget, not having it in the budget to have multiple
costumes.
Different costumes for every character. Mm-hmm. So all costumes going unwashed over the 4-week period in the hot Texas heat wave.
Yeah.
Yep.
Kudos to this cast and crew. And this really brings up my point later.
And of course, we've talked about this guy before. John Larroquette did the opening narrations on this film, and it's kind of interesting for a guy just starting out his career. He also did the narrations for the remake, and we've talked about John Larroquette a couple of times. Does anybody remember when?
I do remember when, because I was
a couple of times in a row.
I remember that. So we actually remember, Trish, you remembered one?
I remembered one, and you remembered one.
Yes.
There was this moment of bing on your faces.
It was totally. So you go ahead first, Rich.
Okay. John Larroquette has small part in Cat People,
which was episode 137.
And then immediately after in episode 138 in Altered States. I even did the math. How about that?
You didn't do the research, but at least you came to you this time. Yeah. That's all right.
I did the research last week. I even came up with stuff you didn't last week. So
that's true. That's true. This movie rates really high on IMDb, 7.5 out of 10, and 88% on Rotten Tomatoes with an audience score of 81%. Mm-hmm. Budget-wise, this movie was just $300,000 initially on its budget. It wound up having to go back and get some more money on the editing room, but
you know what? It's interesting, actually. I found a couple different budget figures for this movie.
It was usually, all over the place.
Yeah, usually with these kind of movies, like if I go look at IMDb, it'll say one thing. I go to Wiki, it says another. I tend to believe the IMDb a little bit more, but sometimes the Wiki seems a little more realistic. Mm-hmm. This movie did gross, and both of them tend to agree, in the U.S. was about 30 million. 30.9,
yeah. Somewhere in there.
You know, I read actually something really interesting. I didn't write it down, but I read yesterday.
Hold that thought for a second, because I think I know where that's going.
Yep.
I want Sam to bring up his thing.
About the cast and crew getting fucked?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yep. There we go. Yes. That's what I want.
I mean, how does a movie make $30.9 million and the cast and crew only get $8,100 to split between 20 of them?
Yep.
Yep.
That is absolute bullshit.
Okay.
Do you know the reason why?
I do.
I do, too.
Oh, well.
I do not know the reason why. I couldn't find it.
I thought that was where you were going, so that's why I wanted Sam to do his bit before we did the explanation.
No worries. Well, here, you go ahead. It's okay. Pretty interesting.
Because the distribution company for this was actually using this film to launder money from Deep Throat.
Yep.
That was run by the mob.
See, I read that, and I read that mob guy was not actually connected to that production company. It was two separate production companies.
I think another one came in later and when the movie was purchased. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a case of, okay, this movie made this much amount of money, but how much was actually stolen by the mob?
Yeah.
There's something about how they were all told that the movie made much less money than it did.
Yeah, they were definitely lied to. And when the new distribution company came in, they all did get a bump, but initially, they all got like just a few hundred dollars.
Exactly. They sued.
Yes.
And they got $500,000 awarded, which is still not enough.
And I believe that on top of that, when the movie was bought, they were paid as well as a part of the agreement to.
When New Line bought it, New Line really stepped up to the plate when they bought the franchise, the rights of the franchise.
Which is interesting because they only made one movie.
They're associated with the 2003 remake.
Oh, they might now, but in the initial run, they did one movie as New Line before New Line was purchased by Warner Brothers, and it didn't do that great.
The creative accounting and the money laundering, it's kind of funny, because when you talk about creative accounting, I can sort of see why they didn't know about this, because you would talk about some movies now where you're like, how did this get not make money? Like, Spinal Tap went through the same thing.
Yeah, and to launder money from Deep Throat, I'm like, well, so which movie made more? Because I'm going to guess it was Texas Chainsaw.
Yep.
By a large margin. Yeah.
You know, and also talking about the budget, I thought it was interesting that relatively little money was spent shooting the movie, and they almost doubled their budget in post-production and editing.
Yeah. Mm.
That's also what I was reading,
That's something that's really interesting, because the movie is really tightly edited.
It's really a solid piece. I remember the first time I saw this, I'm like, I'm not sure how I feel about this, because, I mean, at this point, I'd already seen a whole bunch of other slashers, because I was young enough that it was really hard to get Texas Chainsaw Massacre at a video store, because a lot of video stores wouldn't carry it in Canada.
Yep.
Right? But so it took a long time before I actually got a chance to see the original movie. And I remember feeling, this is really dark, it's really gritty. I couldn't sort of, my young mind couldn't grab it the way I did with the Jasons and the Freddies, because they were so slick. Mm-hmm. Watching it now as an adult with a more practiced eye towards filmmaking, this movie actually is probably one of the creepiest fucking films I've ever seen.
Well, the set design of it is, for what they made it on, is phenomenal. The set design should have cost a lot more, considering what they did.
They lucked in and found abandoned places, and they were just...
They looked for roadkill.
The bone furniture and just the way they created that whole look.
That's all found items.
I know, it's amazing. Upcycling.
Yeah, so, I mean, they did it on the cheap, and it's a good lesson for filmmakers in general, like, when you're just coming up and trying to make something out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And God knows I've done that. So,
you know, I feel like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is the very definition of short-term suffering for a long-term lasting piece of art.
Yeah.
Because yeah. people definitely suffered while making that movie, ooh, but sure. it's definitely paid off.
Everybody, I mean, Toby Hooper even says that by the end of that shoot, everybody hated him.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't know. It's like, if I ever see Toby Hooper again, I'm going to kill him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure that those feelings softened over time.
I'm sure.
At the time, I'm sure, there was a lot of anger.
As this thing
him.
Resonates in the annals of horror history. And I'm going to run that trailer for you right now so you can see why.
What happened was true. The most bizarre and brutal series of crimes in America. Is the movie that is just as real, just as close.
Save me! You gotta make this stop!
Just as terrifying as being there.
Please.
Even if one of them survives, what will be left? The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. After you stop screaming, you'll start talking about it.
All right, that was the classic 1974 Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And how do you, what do you guys feel about this film in general? We already know this is one of Jeff's favorites.
Yep.
Like, when I watched this again, and I had just purchased a anniversary cleaned up Blu-ray, and part of me thinks it lost something because it didn't have that really gritty grain to it that I had initially seen the film, and I think that is part of what makes the movie so disturbing. Ironically, Tobe Hooper was thinking, when he edited this movie together, we were talking about editing, he was aiming for a PG-13. Yeah. There was no PG-13 in 1974, but a PG rating. There's like, this is one of the least bloody films I've seen as a horror movie. But, oh my God, for tension and tone. And because of the way he edited it and left so much to the audience's minds about what the horror was, he had trouble not getting an X. He had to keep editing and editing it down just to get an R rating, and then he just threw up his hands in defeat and said, fuck it.
Well, yeah. Until you get to kind of the end where she's covered in blood, it's not that bloody of a movie.
You know, and all the bloody parts are very visceral, like the hitchhiker cutting his hand in the car, or them slicing the woman's thumb, and the grandpa sucking on it.
Well, that's because they actually sliced her thumb.
Yep.
Because they couldn't get the piping to work.
Yep.
And a lot of the blood in the final scene is from her running through the bushes and stuff. She actually cut herself up. So there's a lot of legit blood in this movie. Yeah,
there is. That was one of the other pieces of trivia I read, is that there wasn't a single cast member who was not injured by the end of the filming.
I honestly believe that the term blood, sweat, and tears is made for this movie. Marilyn Burns covered all those things.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yeah, she's the only one who really, and her and Gunnar Hansen really only really translated this into a middling career in film, right?
Yeah. And personally, I think the title of this movie should be Texas Clubbing Massacre, because the chainsaw comes out late in the film and there's only one person who gets injured, and that's Leatherface.
Yes.
Also, Gunnar Hansen being injured in real life for that scene.
Because
he's burning.
They put, what they did, they wound up putting this metal piping around his leg where the chainsaw would go, and then they wound up padding out the outside with meat and blood bags so you could get that effect. But what they didn't plan for was the chain hitting the metal and heating it up, so he wound up getting burns on his leg.
Yeah.
I'm like, or you could have just used a gimmick chainsaw. The sound would have been enough to sell it. Why were you using a real chainsaw?
And if you can, here's
why did you have to do it? You could have just rigged up a fake leg.
Yes.
Well, they used a real chainsaw in a few scenes. There's a scene where they're holding the chainsaw in front of somebody's face, and they're warning them, do not move, because this is a real chainsaw.
Well,
it comes back to its low budget.
I knew a guy who juggled chainsaws, and here's part of the problem.
Wait. You knew?
Past tense?
Oh, he's still alive. I just don't know. We fell out of touch.
Well, how do you even come across meeting somebody who does this in the first place? But okay, go ahead.
I was living in Vancouver at the time. I also knew a guy who did balloon animals. I don't know why. Stuff happened. Anyway.
It sounds like a thing.
I met a lot of interesting people. It was just a time in my life. You know, I did a lot of stuff.
In her defense, I know people who do similar things.
I mean, when I lived there, I learned how to do the trick with a nail and putting it in your nose and making it look like you're hamming your head. I know how to do that. It's weird. But anyway.
We'll put that on YouTube.
The guy who juggled chainsaws is like going, look, it's really, the blades are still there, but nothing's moving unless you've got your finger on the trigger. Mm. So, because he got injured once, but it was just like the force of the blade coming down on his hand that injured him. It wasn't the fact that the blade was moving. So what they could have done with the leg is, honestly, if they out of the shot dropped it far enough, it would have cut the blood bag, it would have done fine, and the chain would have been moving, and it wouldn't have burned him.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm getting at.
Yeah. Oh, well, and he was chasing Marilyn Burns in that end scene as well. Like, even with all that gear and stuff on him, he could run faster than her. So he had to, like, that's why he's chopping up some of the foliage and stuff, is just to kind of
slow it down
and fill out the scene so it's not so ridiculous.
Well, and it actually helped create some of the tension, too.
It does.
Even though it was a device to slow him down, it actually worked really well.
Well, it also
makes it look crazy.
Filling out that scene
it makes it look like intimidation. But there's certain things in this movie I think I appreciate, because they don't do it as much in the remake. And I really like the remake as well, because they do kind of travel their own path, but they don't wind up having the heavy vegetarian message. They don't even allude to the fact that these guys might be cannibals. That doesn't happen until the prequel.
Yeah, which was a little disappointing, actually. They took out some of the really key elements that made the first film work.
Yeah,
I agree.
And they kind of watered it down a little bit for me.
Yeah.
There's something Gunnar Hansen, his performance depended on the face he was wearing.
Yes.
Which I really appreciated. It's almost like if he didn't have these faces, he wouldn't have a personality.
Yeah.
You know, I read that Gunnar Hansen, Toby Hooper, well, as you kind of mentioned before, he really let Gunnar Hansen create his character, and he went and did a lot of work with people who are mentally handicapped and studied how they talked and you know, what they acted like when they got angry or upset, and really tried to, and like how they moved their mouths when they weren't doing anything, and really tried to build all of these type of quirks and attributes into his performance. And I really noticed, and I never noticed before, watching both of these movies back to back, a lot of people really underestimate how good Gunnar Hansen's performance is in the first Texas Chainsaw. And in the remake, it's just not there.
Yeah, I think, they just go for more monster in the remake.
Yeah.
Well, mindless killer.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if it's quite mindless. There are certain elements that are still there to show that he still has that childlike mind. But I think Gunnar Hansen is easily the best actor in the original movie. There's performances. I'm like, what is going on? Like, why is this movie so high regarded? Because initially those kids are like,
you know, I got to throw some shade. The guy who played Franklin is pretty much the worst actor in the movie.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was going to say before, like, I meant, like, in the original, Gunnar Hansen is great, like, it's the childlike mind, but in the remake, it is a mindless killer. I'm not getting anything from that guy.
That was one of the things I said, was thinking about when I said they watered it down a lot, they took away the character of Leatherface.
Yeah.
And I really, really, really hated the fact that they gave him this skin condition. I thought that was a fucking absolutely useless add-in.
It didn't need to
justify
to be
the
that.
Mask.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It took away the terror of it.
I didn't mind his face. That was something actually even Tobe Hooper wanted to do early on, but, and they just yanked it because they thought it would be too much.
I actually have some crazy trivia that I found that I don't know if I thought it blew my mind anyway. So in Leatherface, Texas Chainsaw 3, they originally shot a scene where they showed Leatherface's face under the mask.
That's right.
And they weren't able to use it I've heard people say that they couldn't put it in because it would have given the movie an X rating. However, I was able to find an interview with the director of that movie in a Fandango magazine where he said that he wasn't allowed to put the unmasking scene in the movie because the producers told him they wanted to save the unmasking for Chainsaw 5 with no talk about a 4. However, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre reboot is the 5th entry in the franchise, and that's the first time we see him unmasked.
Hmm.
So I do think that that's really interesting that they told him that he couldn't put the unmasking in 3 because they wanted to save it for 5, and that is what happened. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's a coincidence or if that's planning. I doubt it's planning, but it's interesting.
Well, I can see why they said 5, because if the 4 was not going to come out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it was interesting to see him without his mask, but I like I said, my issue with it was the cop-out device of the skin disease.
Mm-hmm.
I love the horror of...
Yeah, you know,
not knowing why he wore the leather or the faces.
He's not somebody I need an origin story for. Yeah, okay, he's a little slow, but I like the idea of his personalities are in the faces he takes.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's got his killer face, that really leathery one.
Yeah.
And then the more female face, that's when he's like the patriarch.
Lady, the old
you know?
Lady one.
Well, yeah, he's the cook. He's the homemaker during
patriarch,
those scenes.
He's the domestic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love how he dresses up for dinner, because that's a very Southern Texas thing to do.
And that's a different mask as well as Pretty Woman face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah. Although I really liked the moments in the remake where he's Eric Balfour's face.
Yeah.
I thought that was good, but they only pulled that trick once.
Yes.
And then he's back into the normal monstrous one.
It's really, I mean, I'm not going to, we're just talking about the original Texas Chainsaw versus the remake. One thing I will say though, is that say what you will about the most recent movie, Leatherface, as a prequel, I did think it was good how it was handled in terms of Leatherface's character. They decided to take an approach where he's like a normal kid, and then how could a normal kid be made into someone who has no personality other than his masks? They did a good job, I thought.
Yeah. Well, I might have to check that out.
I see, and I was actually hoping to watch that last night, but yeah. I only had time for one movie last night, unfortunately. But yeah, I was actually hoping to watch it, because I did want to see it.
It's definitely not as bad as Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning, or The Next Generation. So.
Well, Sam was referencing our 31 Days of Horror Challenge, and that's coming up. We will be running those episodes in November as we're watching them. But as you're listening to this, we're passing the halfway mark as to what we're watching. If you're following us on Twitter, at least Sam and I don't think Trish is posting much. She's not teasing ahead of time what she's watching, but
it's a surprise. Also, I'm lazy, so let's do that.
Let's go with
I'll
that.
Say it's a surprise, but I'm just lazy.
But yes, our 31 Days of Horror Challenge, and for us, that challenge isn't just to watch 31 horror movies, but watch 31 horror movies we've never seen before, and that culminates in a two-part special in November. Well, we're hoping for two, but who knows? It could be longer. They're always mammoth fun episodes to do. And if Jeff is holding up with his end, he might be joining us for that episode as well.
Oh, you bet.
Yay.
Okay.
Hey, back to the movie.
Back to Rat.
Back to Rat.
You know what I think about the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre? So not long ago, and I'm probably going to make people angry by saying this, I watched The Last House on the Left for the first time. And The Last House
on
the
Left. He's young, forgive him.
Yeah, The Last House on the Left was one of those movies. Actually, that was before my 31 Days of Horror. That didn't even count. It's a movie I'd never seen before, and one that was always held up as a luminary of the genre, and something that a lot of people talked about very highly. And, I watched it, and it wasn't as crazy as I thought. It wasn't as disturbing as it was built up to be, and I feel like Texas Chainsaw Massacre is maybe the only horror movie, or 1970s horror movie specifically, where people always build it up in terms of something that's really disturbing and gets under your skin, and it's the only one I think that really delivers.
I might disagree with you on that, but yeah. We'll cover that when we cover Last House on the Left, because we haven't done it yet, and I saw them back-to-back, the original and remake a few years ago.
And I'm not saying it's bad, it's good. But
no, I know you're not saying it's bad. But I think the original is quite disturbing, especially we'll get into it in a future episode. But there's some of that Keystone Cops stuff that I think really it feels out of place, but adds to the unsettling nature of that movie. But we'll get to that down the road for sure.
Another episode. We have enough to talk about in this one.
Yep.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Like, this movie, it's sort of, part of what disturbs me about it, and it's this, the odd thing, but when we discuss about, like, how uncomfortable it was for all the actors doing it, like, I can feel it. Like, the heat just comes off the screen. Mm-hmm. The heat, which would drive somebody insane doing all this stuff in there. Like, you could, like, people could have died of heat stroke. They could have.
I think most people in this movie were insane. Like, on screen, I don't have a lot of sympathy for the kids because, well, at least Franklin, because he's so unlikable.
Yeah, but he is.
He's got the connection to the property that they're going to go to and hang out with after their encounter with the hitchhiker, the crazy hitchhiker.
Yeah, that's probably my one issue with the original is, first off, their motivation for being there. I mean, they it's kind of set up so it all ties together, but it's feels a little forced to me with it, with them going to check and make sure that their grandfather's grave is okay after these grave robbings. It just doesn't feel as organic as it might have, and that may have just been due to limitations of the writing.
You know, one thing I actually think is really interesting, and I actually somehow completely forgot about the very, very beginning of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where they have recordings of a news report set to, like, photos, and they're talking about grave robbings. And I thought that that was actually a really, really evocative of its source material and inspiration.
I was just going to bring that up, too. Like, this was something they used in the 70s a lot of times, based on a true story, but they don't have to be. Like, it is... This is based on the story of Ed Gein, and Ed Gein also inspired Psycho and Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs, as that well as
lesser known movie Deranged.
Deranged, and they're all very different movies, so you got to take it with a grain of salt because there's so little that's actually real in this movie. And with Ed Gein, he wound up in the 1950s. He was notorious ghoul or grave robber, and would use that to make furniture and all sorts of things with the bones of the dead. And he killed two women as well. People think he's a notorious serial killer. He only actually killed two people.
Yeah.
Not to diminish the seriousness of that, but he was definitely mentally ill.
He was big on skinning people and making stuff out of their skin. There was lampshades. He had a dress. There was tons of stuff. And then using their bones.
Like skull cups and bowls.
Yeah, and I feel there's more of that in the original film of Texas Chainsaw than there is in the remake. Like, their like Texas home in the remake is actually quite well kept.
It's too clean.
It is too clean.
You know, it feels like more a southern estate would look.
I would actually say that for the remake, its biggest problem in general is the whole thing is too clean.
Yeah,
And actually, I was disappointed to read that. So with the remake, the DOP or the cinematographer, they got the same cinematographer as the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It was Daniel Pearl, and he was working with Marcus Nespaul on a couple movies like Pathfinder he shot. And he convinced Marcus Nespaul to direct the remake, who originally didn't want to, because he didn't want to, you know, touch hallowed ground. Then after convincing him to direct it, went on to say that he didn't want to shoot it in a gritty documentary style because he did that already, and he wanted to shoot the remake with a traditional Hollywood style. And I really feel like that was one of the major detractors from the movie, was the cinematography. Unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, I think the film
make it look same.
And I think it looks good, but yeah, and that's just it. I appreciate the remake. I think it's four remakes is a fairly strong one, especially from Platinum Dunes, who it just gets goes downhill from there.
Right.
And there's plenty of them. But, you know, I got to give him kudos for doing something different. Is it better? No, I don't think so. There's those subtle things that, and I think it's just a case of accident having the right guys for the original. Because there's
the original is like flash in a bottle.
Yeah, it is. Like, the performances aren't great, but, and then you get annoying characters like Franklin that it's like, Jesus, hopefully he dies early.
And he doesn't.
And he doesn't.
But I think he was supposed to be annoying, and that was the whole point of Franklin.
Yeah, and I did appreciate that the remake didn't use the same characters from the original film. Like, they are different characters. There's nods to them. Instead of Franklin being in the wheelchair, it's the father figure of Leatherface, the patriarch of the family.
The old grandpa with no legs.
Yeah, I mean, the pervial grandpa. That family's a very different structure as well. you don't have that big dinner scene at the end of the movie.
I really miss that.
Yeah.
It is a shame.
I actually feel like if you were to remake Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I feel like there would be a couple things that I would consider touchstones of the franchise that you do not take away, and that would be both cannibalism and the dinner scene are so iconic.
But I think the removal of it is because the cannibalism was gone, the dinner scene was gone too.
Yeah, I think they allude to it, but they never come out and say it. They never really show it.
They did it in the
prequel. But I think after Texas Chainsaw Massacre 4, The Next Generation, that they didn't want to do that again so quickly, because they did do the dinner scene in there, and that movie's just horrible. Like,
that movie's
here's
horrible
this
for a
remake.
Lot of reasons.
It's a remake, and a remake done really badly. So, in hindsight, this
like
is actually pretty good.
It's like a remake sequel. Like, maybe there's mutant people involved with the government.
Sure, kind of like when we did Evil Dead, except...
The whole maybe takeaway of The Next Generation, spoiler alert for those who are listening, but don't watch it, it's terrible. There's a whole thing about how the government controls cannibal families all across the United States. And how the original family in the original Texas Chainsaw was a government experiment where they make people cannibal families, and... And maybe also the people working for the government are mutants. Mm-hmm. Terrible.
That was just the one thing I enjoyed in the prequel movie, although there's not much to enjoy.
Terrible.
The prequel to the remake is they show this dying town and how they survive in this economic struggle. It was kind of a necessity for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they took that right from the original movie. You know,
yeah.
Because they talk about that when they pick up
those undertones are there.
Yeah, they... You know... One thing I that just blows me away every time I watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because every time I watch it, I feel like I take away something new. But that's a movie where it's really amateurish, and it's a first for most people involved, and it gets a lot of credit for being a very amateur movie. But there's so much about it that is so technically proficient. There's so many subtleties, and there's so many script details and small scenes and acting choices that really flesh out the world and give you a greater sense of things that are happening.
Yeah, I think that was the freedom in that movie really helps that movie.
Yeah.
In a lot of respects.
Yeah, and we were talking about strong performances from Gunnar Hansen, but the actor who plays the hitchhiker.
Yeah, he's great.
He was so amazing, especially in the scene in the van. When you felt like he was crazy.
Yeah.
There's no doubt in your mind that this individual was crazy. It didn't feel like somebody performing crazy. It felt like somebody crazy.
Right? Yeah, and yeah, absolutely.
He's another actor who did go on to do some more film work, mostly voice work and stuff like that. I read that he did all 120 voices in an English language adaptation of a Japanese TV series.
That's crazy.
Wow. Yeah.
That is nuts.
You know, I was saying to my wife last night when we were watching it that there's a lot of movies where they say, oh, this is the reason you don't pick up hitchhikers. It's because they're murderers. And that's kind of the case with this one. But you watch it and you say to yourself, this is the reason you don't pick up hitchhikers, because they could just be like effing weird and, you know, ask you for money after taking your picture and cut themselves. And
there are weird little things in both movies. Like, yeah, he takes the picture, cuts himself, burns the picture in front of them. He does some weird stuff. And it takes me back to the remake, which I'll run the trailer for here briefly, when they find the car graveyard, the evidence of like other other people have been taken at some point, but they find these jars that look like they're filled with urine and the pictures of the people who are in cars.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is that?
You know,
that's exactly what they say when they look at it. They're like, what is that?
And I really feel it's just there for you to do that.
Yes.
Because there's no real rhyme or reason for it.
So one thing, so this is kind of a subject I don't think people talk about, because I don't personally think that there's a lot there. But in the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, at the very beginning of the movie, they're in the van, and one of the women is talking about astrology, and she's talking about how Saturn is going into retrograde and all of this various stuff. And I was joking with my wife that Texas Chainsaw is like the ultimate retrograde movie, being, you know, bad things happen during when different things are in retrograde. But so there's a little bit of an astrological mention, at the very least, at the beginning of that one. Now, in the remake, they have a bumper sticker on their car which says something like, nothing is true, everything is permitted, which is something that is sometimes attributed to Aleister Crowley. And there are some aspects of the remake, like with the pictures being in the jar, which I wonder if they were originally going for some sort of occultic type feel or vibe or direction that ultimately was lost but still ended up portions in the movie.
I like the theory, but yeah, I think
it's a bit of a stretch.
I think that's a stretch, but the bumper sticker is pretty much in reference to that beginning, this is a true story, and then they're basically telling you, well, no, it's not.
Yeah.
I think that's all a nod to the fact that, yeah, we're telling you it's true, but it really isn't.
Yeah.
Don't believe what we're telling you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, yeah, and there's, I'm going back to a little bit here because we kind of got sidetracked a little bit, but one of the things that they do in both movies is they warn those kids, right? That hitchhiker is a fucking warning, right?
Absolutely.
If they had gone a different direction after that experience, none of this would have happened.
Yeah.
Beginning when the girl, they pick up the girl and she blows off her head.
Well, even at the gas station. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he's trying to keep them from going near the house. Either that or he's going to call and say, hey, I got you a fresh batch over here.
Yeah.
Right.
Either way. But I feel like it's more of a warning, per se.
Yeah. Well, certainly. And in the remake, our Lee Ermey is basically warning them.
Yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. It's like they want to do this, but they don't. They also don't want to. There's that weird conflict there.
Cabin in the Woods, whereas like Cabin in the Woods, I totally think the whole homage at the gas station is this Cabin in the Woods, where they're like he's warning them off, but at the same time they're going to go ahead.
I gotta defend the family just a little bit, because in both movies these strangers just go tromping in their house.
Oh yeah,
that's true.
Because in fact they're in the remake they're trying to help them. You know, use the phone, wait outside. If fucking Balfour would have just stayed outside, I think everybody would have been fine and off on the road.
Then we wouldn't have a movie, I guess.
We wouldn't have the movie.
And it's interesting, too, because at the beginning of the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, there's also the guy who's drunk at the graveyard, just lying on the ground. Mm. And, like, that's a warning.
Yeah. And, I mean, they, especially in the original film, they're going into the house and only Leatherface is there. Yeah. So with this childlike mind, he doesn't know what to do. Like he's feels threatened and he's defending his house and his family because he doesn't know what else to do.
You know, there's nobody there to help him.
Yeah.
Another aspect of the remake that I thought was a missed opportunity was Leatherface's introduction in the original is, you know, the guy walks up and then Leatherface steps in front of him, and then it has a close-up shot of him, and he's holding up the hammer, and he hits him, and like, what an introduction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the first time you see Leatherface in the remake, Leatherface is shambling, and you see his face in shadow, and they do a whole bunch. And I feel like for such an iconic introduction and such a shocking introduction in the original one, it was maybe a missed opportunity not to do like a big star reveal type thing in the remake as well. Especially when something that like that really sold how frightening the scene was that one, a couple times they do a close ups of Leatherface as he's about to kill someone. It's almost like the sight equivalent to a jump scare. Cause they don't have the sound, but they do a scary close up when you least expect it.
Yeah. I'm going to run the trailer for the remake here, but I do want to talk more about the sound design on that film.
Tell me how much you love me.
How much?
That much?
That much.
That much.
Hey, are you okay?
They're all dead. He's a dead man.
We're gonna have to call the cops, I guess.
Excuse me!
What the hell was that?
What?
I just saw something.
Alright, that's it. If somebody's out there, just come on out!
What is that? The hitchhiker. What were they all doing here?
What the hell are you doing in my house?
You're all gonna die.
do?
What's wrong with you people?
Oh, my, 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 my.
Okay, we were talking a little bit about sound design, and the original film really doesn't have it. that's part of the effectiveness. It kind of does, though.
There's no traditional music.
No,
but there's a lot of subtle things going on.
I mean, they have music that is that they got proper permissions for, but they didn't wind up going for traditional score. Like,
there's a lot in the original movie where, in lieu of a score, they have basically a use of what animals would hear in sounds. Slaughterhouses.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of slaughterhouse sound effects used to great effect throughout the movie.
Yeah, you can even hear like the squealing of pigs a lot.
Yes.
Yeah. So I feel like even though it's subtle, there is a lot of sound design going on in the original
movie.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. It's not a case of the score building up the mood. It's these really out of place sounds and sometimes the lack of it that adds to the disturbing nature of the film.
Yeah. Yeah. We've talked about that before, where sometimes not having music or sound effects actually creates tension better than having the music does.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't notice the music in the remake that much, but they have a more traditional score there and
It
does feel a little more heavy metal. Inspired.
They did two soundtracks for this.
Did they?
Yes, they did a traditional score, and then they did a heavy metal soundtrack.
There's the music inspired by.
Yeah.
And it's just think in your head of 15 bands from circa 2003 that are like hard rock metal bands, and they're on there. So.
Yeah. Yeah, there's one song on that soundtrack that was written for the movie, and I don't even think it makes it into the movie, but
yeah.
They play for like 15 seconds of it.
You know, actually, speaking of, so talking about music, the remake is supposed to take place in the 70s.
Yes.
And it really does not feel like it at all.
It doesn't. And it's funny, I think you were leading into something else that I read, which is actually a really funny point about Lynyrd Skynyrd.
So
the songs you hear, and the songs that you reference were not released until a year after this movie is supposed to take place.
Oh, yeah.
It's rough.
Yeah, right.
You know, in the vein of a movie that's supposed to take place in the 70s and doesn't feel like it, I feel like in a just world, Rob Zombie should have directed that remake rather than Halloween.
Given Devil's Rejects,
yeah.
Thinking about what that movie looks like.
Like, Rob Zombie's whole deal.
I think he would have been more at home with that franchise than Halloween.
Like, all of his movies, I feel like even today, it's like Rob Zombie's whole career is built around him being the perfect person to do a remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Whether it be good or bad, it's just his style is very much about people who are in the backwoods of rural America and violence happens and they're weird... And I was reading someone saying that House of 1,000 Corpses is closer to Texas Chainsaw Massacre than Rob Zombie's Halloween is to Halloween.
I like to think that they're neighbors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think Rob Zombie should definitely do a remake.
I would love to see his characters mesh with those ones.
Yeah. That would be kind of fun. They sort of cross-universe it. That would be actually a lot of fun.
I would be...
First in line for the freaking tickets? Yes.
Yeah. Sorry, Trish had something.
Oh, sorry. I forgot it because you made an amazing point. I just had this visual like Shaun of the Dead where they're chasing somebody and they're just past each other. They're like, hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
I don't even know if Jeff knows this. There was a comic book series that Topps put out and it was Jason meets Leatherface, essentially.
Yeah, there's a crazy scene where they fight each other on a train.
They do, but before that... Leatherface and Jason actually get along. Like, Jason is welcomed into the family and he feels welcome. And at some point, there's the calling of him wanting to go back to Crystal Lake, which causes the rift between him and the family. And that's where the conflict starts. But it was a neat idea and I quite enjoyed it. And it's one of those things I don't know if we'll ever see on film. So
is it because he was like, you know, I got to go back to the lake. It's too hot here. I don't enjoy it. It's dusty.
Yeah.
I need a watery area to do my best work.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like Leatherface is very iconic. I feel like that's a non-controversial statement. But I feel like one of the aspects about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies that really make them work is the families themselves, like Leatherface's family and all of his relations. And you don't, other than the one, the main addition I really liked about the remake is I really liked the idea of having a sheriff character who they thought was helping them and turns out to be part of the family. That was a really cool addition. However, you don't really get a sense of the family in the remake.
No, you don't. And I really liked how they introduced the lady and her daughter and the kidnapped kid, and like, sort of expanding that family a little bit. But then it just felt flat.
Yeah.
They didn't do anything with it.
Great idea. Poor execution.
Well, I got the feeling that at least between Hoyt and Leatherface, that somewhere along the way, Hoyt was the one that got Leatherface under his thumb and had control over this big beast of a man. But we haven't actually talked about Texas Chainsaw 2003. This was directed by Marcus Nispel, as Jeff had said. He actually directed the absolutely terrible remake of Friday the 13th in 2009.
A little bit of a point of contention. I actually think that his I think that his Friday the 13th is much better than his Texas Chainsaw, because at the very least, his Friday the 13th is fun. Like it, there are moments
it's
like a Friday the 13th.
It's a clip show. We'll get into that when we cover that movie. But it's a fucking clip show. Well, I'll make sure I invite you back for that one.
But you know, Marcus Nispel also directed the terrible Conan the Barbarian remake,
which we covered in episode 40.
Terrible.
Me, Trish, and Sam wasn't there for that one, but we had Tyler join us for that episode.
The one movie he didn't want to do at all.
But you know what? I think that why this movie is actually not as bad as it could be is because the screenplay was by Scott Kosar, who wrote The Machinist, The Crazies, which we've covered on this show before, and the Amityville Horror remake.
Probably the weakest of
Probably his weakest as well. We covered The Crazies in episode 95, so go check that out.
Yeah, that's good.
This movie was budgeted at $9.2 million and it grossed $26.5, which actually makes it way more expensive than the original, and this was a worldwide gross and made less.
You know, so. I actually did a little bit of an inflation calculator, because no one really does that for movies that came out this century.
I do it from time to time.
But but this would be a $13 million movie today.
But then you think about how much it made.
Yeah.
Calculation.
The IMDb rating isn't bad. I mean, 7.5 for the original, 6.2, which still isn't a terrible rating. But Rotten Tomatoes, the critics certainly weren't kind to this movie at 37%. And the audience score was a little more in line with that middling IMDb rating of 57%. This movie stars Jessica Biel, who we covered in a different episode. I'm asking too much. This is going to come up a lot today. We covered her in a previous episode, 84, Total Recall.
She wasn't that.
Yeah. Jonathan Tucker, who plays Morgan, you can catch him in Sleepers and Hostage. Andrew Biernarski, who played Leatherface. We actually have seen him in another movie we covered in episode 87, which was Mother's Day. And Sam might know him better as Butterfinger in Hudson Hawk.
About to say, I was like, he's the guy from Hudson Hawk when I saw his picture.
You know, I was reading, he's also in Michael Bay's Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, Michael Bay uses him a lot.
Yeah. Apparently he requested specifically to play Leatherface.
He did. And then he wasn't cast, but then the other actor dropped out, so he ended up getting the role anyhow.
Yeah.
You know who the other actor was?
Dolph Lundgren?
That was the one.
Ooh.
He wanted to spend more time with his family.
See, I know some things.
just what a strange choice. It would be a different movie. Or would it?
I mean, size-wise, he actually probably wouldn't have been as big as Andrew here, but but tall, he would have been tall.
Well, they had to add 140 pounds worth of padding to Andrew.
And he beefed up to about 300 pounds before the movie, so that's a lot. Erica Lierce, who played Pepper, she was in another terrible movie called Blair Witch 2, The Book of Shadows. Mike Vogel, who played Andy, we talked about him in episode 69. He was in Poseidon. Eric Balfour, we've never talked about, but I'm glad we get to do it a little bit today. He was probably best known for his roles in the Haven TV series and Skyline. The recently passed R. Lee Ermey, who played Sheriff Hoyts. come on, everybody's seen Full Metal Jacket and Seven, so come on. If you don't know who he is, you don't watch movies.
He was the strongest part of them, of the remake.
For sure. Yeah. Definitely the most experienced actor on this cast.
He's also in The Frighteners.
David Dorfman was Jedediah, but we actually talked about him before.
I know this one, The Ring.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, good for you. Lauren German, who played the teenage girl, she was the hitchhiker version in this movie.
Yeah.
Instead of the crazy member of the family, this is actually a victim of a family who's escaped and commits suicide in the back of their van. And you can see her as the lead on Lucifer right now.
You know, I actually thought probably the most interesting shot in the whole movie is when they're all looking on in horror after she's shot herself. And then the camera goes through the hole in her head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I used that as a gift for on Friday, not realizing that it was in this movie because I hadn't seen it in its entirety yet. And somebody asks, what movie is that from? I'm like, shit, I don't know. And then I went and looked. I'm like, oh, well, fuck, I'm going to be watching it tomorrow night.
kind of
a bit of a spoiler for me.
You know, it's been a long-term goal/dream of mine to draw a comic remake of Texas Chainsaw, but swapping all of the main teenager characters with the Scooby-Doo gang and replacing Franklin with Scooby-Doo because they all drive a similar vehicle. Their archetypes are similar. You know, this is like a bit of a passion in my brain.
I actually, speaking of Twitter, I just recently posted on my own feed, I found somebody had made a picture of Shaggy and Scooby pointing at the wall, and Michael Myers had pinned Freddy to the wall.
See, going with the Scooby gang, I just imagine that, you know, at the end of every episode, oh no, it's the old man who ran the disused theme park by his leather face. They're like, oh no, it's
Yeah, exactly.
Put it back on.
I did a number of drawings a couple years ago of various scenes from Texas Chainsaw Massacre with Scooby-Doo characters and like Leatherface about to put Velma on a hook and stuff like that, and it was pretty good.
Wow.
That's a good way to segue to talk into some of the controversy about the original film.
Mm. Go for it.
With they talk specifically about the scene where they put the one female character on the hook and how this movie sort of started that trend of victimizing women in horror films.
Mm, interesting.
Which is interesting because our heroine, Sally, she
the victims
saves herself.
Are about 50-50 in this movie.
They are. They're about 50-50.
In fact, all the men you know fully die, the chick in the freezer still might have been able to get away.
She believes that she's gotten away.
Yeah. Although, she did get hooked, so I'd like to think her spine's probably not in the best
shape. Well, no, I think she probably would have gotten hooked like under the shoulder blade because it would have held better. But this is when we talk about how like actually non-bloody this is. When I see somebody getting put on a hook, like it's a very visceral reaction. I'm not seeing anything, but I'm imagining it.
You know,
that's
one of the things
horror.
That really sells it so well is that character. You've just spent the whole movie with a lot of shots of her from behind and how she's wearing a top that comes from behind her back and then up
it's open
on her
back.
Front. And it's the 70s, so she's not wearing a bra. So there's a lot of shots of her and you see her bare back. And then when Leatherface picks her up and hangs her, you subconsciously know or convince yourself that she's being hung on a hook for real. Yeah. There's not clothing to hang off of.
Yeah.
Now, in the remake, they show that Pepper getting hanged, but there's a scene where they find Eric Balfour in the tub, but you can see there's a hole in his shirt and where he had probably been hung at one point. And I thought that was actually pretty cool that they show that he had been hung, but we never actually got to see that actually happen in the film.
And then we see the other, I'm sorry, I've forgotten his name, but the sort of the other male character, he also gets hung on the hook.
Morgan.
Yeah.
Morgan
in the remake.
No, all three.
Oh, there is another one.
Andy, the blonde guy, gets hung because his leg gets cut off.
Yeah.
Right. So they hang.
I was sorry. It wasn't Pepper who got hung. It was Andy because Pepper actually never makes it to the house.
That's right. So they sort of set that up as it's something he does to everybody, right? So it's not just something that happens to the female characters, and they flip that on its head a little bit, and I like that.
Which, yeah.
There isn't as much blood as you think in the remake either, because there's a lot of times where it cuts away as you think you're going to see the gore. And
especially
then
when Morgan dies.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
I was reading that they did a lot of special effects, and they really had to cut it back because they would have gotten an X rating.
Yeah. No, there was a lot. Like when they're cutting... I can't remember who got cut in half, but you just see the chainsaw move up to the groin, and it was supposed to be like guts pouring out.
It was Morgan.
And all that.
It was Morgan.
Morgan.
Yeah.
And you just see, you know what's going to happen, and they cut away from that.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that that stuff got shot and then never used. And considering how bloody some movies get now, that...
Yeah, the one we were talking about earlier before we started podcasting is a good example of that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that one in November.
Yeah, that's what I just said when we were talking about. Yeah, and it's another one where the character is really great with no dialogue. And
it's a very similar scene.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, and you speak about the hanging, like, I mean, Andy got on a hook, but Morgan, he's just got cuffs on, but he's still, it's still his go-to move to hang his victim so he can't get away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If anything I've learned from Texas Chainsaw is Leatherface, he's way better with a hammer.
Yes.
Well, you know, it's interesting because...
Well, it's a slaughterhouse thing to, like, knock him out.
Yeah.
Exactly.
They talk about it with the cows.
We touched on it a little bit about this being, the original being a vegetarian movie, and Tobe Hooper has famously said that Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it's about meat.
Yeah.
And that's as Trish just mentioned, you in a slaughterhouse, you'd hit an animal over the head, and
they talk about how humane it is to kill versus like the hammer to the head versus the air gun bolt gun.
Yeah, and that ties in really nicely to something that bothered me. There's one when they're chasing Jessica Biel's character through the slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
There's a scene where she looks through this hole in the door, and one of the guns is right there. I was waiting to see that used at some point, and I was really deflated when they didn't.
Yeah.
Mm. I just wanted to watch, you know, Javier Bardem with a really weird haircut just wandering around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's how he does it.
One of our favorite directors, Guillermo del Toro, actually said he went vegan after watching the original Texas.
For a little while.
That's really interesting. Well,
and for me, it's not so much when they talk like this movie's about meat and slaughterhouses and that's what people say, like this is the vegetarian message of it. To me, it was the dinner scene and like rotting meat and just the grossness of all of it. I was like, I do not want to eat meat because this is just gross. It's not about the animal killing. You know, I'm just really disgusted by all
because
this.
It's like it has a vegetarian subtext, but it's not necessarily saying that eating meat is bad. It's just presenting it from a different view.
From a very visceral standpoint. Yeah.
From a visceral standpoint. It's not necessarily condemning it. Now, like the whole documentary style that the film is shot, like it's not like they're saying, it's a weird thing for me to say, but it's not like they're saying the family is bad. It's presenting them living their life
it's a different type of meat. That's all they're saying. They're like going, they're eating meat, but it's just a different type of meat. Sorry.
You know, like Jim Sidow has this line about how like he doesn't kill because he can't take any joy from killing, but he's still like excited when when grandpa's going to kill a woman.
And can't do it. That scene's incredible.
This brings up something I wanted to bring up earlier when we were talking about the family. At no point did they say that they had killed before.
Yeah.
Right? Of course, what they're doing, they are robbing graves and they are eating human flesh.
Other than the one line where they talk about the grandpa.
But he says he's the greatest killer? Because he was working in the slaughterhouse, not because he killed people.
I never picked up on that before.
Yeah, because I thought about that. I'm like, wait a minute. I was thinking about that when I was watching it. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah, that's what they're referencing.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
So this is their first instance where they're killing people. At least that's the way I infer it. So they weren't bad. They're just protecting their family.
Mm.
Right? If you look at it that way, are they the villains?
I kind of always looked at it from a way that they had a history of killing and eating people. However, looking at it in a new light, there's nothing to say that they hadn't killed before, which... interestingly makes it closer to reality in terms of what it's based on, in terms of Ed Gein robbing graves and filling his house with ephemera, but then just killing two people when it got to that point.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I kind of think that's where it was inspired by. So I'm now questioning them as villains in either movie.
Yeah. But
that would explain the warnings and stuff at the beginning as well.
See, for me, I inferred it that they had killed before because if they are going to be cannibals, if you're eating already dead flesh, you will die, like it's toxic to you, so they would have to have fresh meat if they were going to be eating it.
Well, and the question is when they're, and that sort of goes to the whole grave robbing, I think they even speak to the fact that they are robbing fresh graves.
Yeah,
but how fresh is it? Plus it's been embalmed, you can't eat that meat.
1974
embalming's been around for a while, dude. Yeah,
you know, that is really interesting because we kind of touched on it earlier about how Leatherface, when there's these strange people in his house and he's kind of acting in self-defense, and then he's just kind of dealing with it as he knows how to do best in his, you know, in his child brain. Yeah, that's a really interesting idea that they had never killed before, and that this is maybe because in Texas Chainsaw 2, it's like 10 years later, and they'd kind of started up a people killing cannibal empire almost. it's interesting to look at it from the point of the first movie being their first time versus them continuing to do it for 10 years.
Yeah, it changes the context of that second movie quite a bit.
Absolutely.
So they're starting their Soylent Green empire.
I was about to say, they were heavy investors in that project.
Yeah.
Charlton Heston, they're just going to show Charlton Heston in another part of the remake.
Because I think every prequel, the prequel to the remake, as well as the newest prequel, both deal with the fact that that he was from like a line of cannibal families.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I don't like that. I like the idea of it was economic desperation that drove them to that.
To robbing graves and eating human flesh, and then this crime of opportunity is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Then again, I mean, the history of it's eating of your own species causes a DNA degradation.
Yeah.
And
mad cow
disease. I don't think they've ever said anything in the movie about inbreeding, but...
But you kind of infer it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not.
Although you don't see any women in that family.
No, they talk about mother in the first one. They do talk about mother.
Right.
Yeah, they talk about mother.
Well, you do see the skeleton in the chair.
Yeah.
That's what I was about to say.
Yeah.
They do have. That's what I'm saying. The family has no women in it for some reason.
It's like there was a mother who died, and then the role is taken on by Leatherface.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got the feeling in the remake that the two women in the trailer were at least part of the family in some way.
I think they are.
Yeah.
I think that's why they put that in, because it felt like a weird thing. They're like, this family has no women. How are they making babies?
Why don't they get to stay in that big house?
Well, that's what I wondered about.
That's what I was actually, when I was rewatching the original, because it has been a long time, and I almost was thinking that that's what they were keeping Sally for, was for breeding. They were going to turn her into a broodmare.
Interesting.
Right. That's what I thought. That's where they were going with that, and then I remembered sort of what happens after the dinner scene.
Well, that's probably what they were trying to do in the remake, because the hitchhiker is obviously very, very traumatized.
Yeah.
Well, there's also, I remember reading that in the remake it was originally supposed to be part of the script that Jessica Biel's character was revealed to have been pregnant.
Yes.
Yeah, which is why she wasn't drinking, why she wasn't doing wasn't smoking pot, wasn't drinking the water.
Can we go back to Lauren German for a second, the hitchhiker? Because maybe it was just me, but was she keeping that gun in her cooch?
That is one of my questions,
Yeah, she must have.
I was like, I looked at it and I'm like, I'm just going to go with her underwear. But, I mean, there's a possibility, because it's sort of when they lift her out of the vehicle and they're like, why is it squishy under here? I'm like going, well, yeah, maybe she tore some stuff when she was shoving that gun up there. Who knows?
Like, you know, I kind of... So, I've seen the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre multiple times. I've seen the second one a couple times. For most of the other Texas Chainsaw movies, I'd only watched them once. So, this is only my second time watching the remake. And watching it again, I'd kind of forgotten about the hitchhiker. And when they kind of have a shot of... It's like her legs, like under her dress. Like there's a lot of what looks like trauma.
Mm-hmm.
I had wondered if there was something untoward that had gone on.
Oh, like we were absolutely saying. Believe that.
But then she pulls out the gun. But I feel like that's maybe implied that she had gone through some trauma.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I inferred, and that's where I went there with, because like I said, when I was watching the original, I was expecting that. That's what I was kind of expecting, because it made sense. It would have made complete sense for them to be keeping her as
like
a
why
breeder.
Did they keep her so long, and why did they keep her for
why
dinner?
Why did they have her for dinner? And all that stuff sort of sets up. It's like, well, we're going to make you part of our family, whether you like it or not.
Yeah,
you know, actually, talking about family dynamics, I read something earlier that I also had somehow missed before. About how Jim Sidow, I'd always just assumed that he was playing their father, but he's apparently playing their brother.
See, that's what I kind of got from them. I thought, like, because they talk about... I thought they all referred to that old, decrepit guy as their father.
As grandfather.
Well, as grandpa,
that's the grandfather.
Grandpa,
and Jim Sidow says, oh, like, go and get your grandpa. But if he's playing their brother, and they were raised by their grandparents... Because I'm assuming that that's what the other female body was the grandmother.
Yeah.
That's interesting to wonder about where are their parents? If they made a point to not have parents. And Jim Sidow's kind of found himself in like a fatherly role, being the oldest sibling. But obviously, there's something that has happened that's caused the grave robbings to start.
You know, that would be fascinating if you'd have a whole story with the parents where they left because they didn't want this cannibal life and they just went out and started a new life and just left their kids behind.
You do get the feeling it was something pathological on Hitchhiker's part because he does catch shit for it.
Yeah.
He's like, you've been going to that graveyard again, and gets beat down for, keeps wandering off to get more parts from the graveyard. So all that shit, it seems like, that's in that house has come from him.
And it, like, it's almost like there was some sort of inciting incident in their life that's caused their family dynamic to start to unravel, which has caused the grave robbing. Like, maybe it's something that he's been doing more because of something. Leatherface has started to presumably be more vocal. I don't know. There's a lot to unpack in the original Texas Chainsaw.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And one of the things about the original one too is in the original, that I mean, every member of that family is clearly mad in some way.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
Right. Whereas in the remake, you don't get that sense.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, certainly you get Arlie Ermey, who plays up the crazy a little bit.
Like, they're kind of just portrayed as backwoods.
Yeah. They're not as nuts.
Like the stereotypical, inbred hillbilly trope.
Yeah, and I don't think that they were subtle enough to pull it off in the remake.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I do get the sense that they're a little bit insane and that there's like this very like sociopathic, psychopathic tendency running through the whole family where it's like, oh no, they have no concept of people that aren't members of the family. Those aren't people.
Yeah, it's just, but it wasn't as amped up as it was in
the
original,
but yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't know how insane, like I said, the old man in the wheelchair.
It's creepy.
Yeah, he's creepy Herbie. As fuck. He's really stern. But he does initially try to help her, making Eric Balfour stay outside, and it's only until they intrude on the home uninvited before shit goes down.
When Jessica Biel is helping him on the toilet, though.
Trying to grab her ass.
That's,
like, Leatherface said.
That's clearly a distraction.
Well, but like, there's a shot where Leatherface walks by the camera, then he looks over and smiles. So I almost wonder, like, he could have had some untoward, some plans.
Yeah, I think maybe there probably was some during that moment.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly my theory about them not having not killed before is completely blown out of the water by this remake because they've got the car graveyard and all the other victims, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But in the original, I kind of got the feeling that they were protecting themselves.
Yeah.
Well, see, and that's why I like the sheriff.
Everybody always views Texas Chainsaw like every single other movie is about how this is something like it's established, they've done this before. I feel like, I've never thought about...
Yeah, well, the original, like, he took out the first guy, and people are coming back in the house, and Leatherface is alone, he's kind of chasing them out again, and he's rocking back and forth in the living room, like, what do I do? Like, people keep coming into the house.
And then, like, Jim Sido, initially gives him an earful about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then a Hitchhiker points out, like, oh no, like, you know, like, there's this one, like, he did good, like, you know, we have this one here. And then Jim Sido, like, thinks for a moment and thinks of something else to yell at Leatherface about.
Oh yeah, because he damaged the door.
Yeah,
when chasing them.
Yeah, that was funny. And I love those really brief moments of humor in the original. Mm-hmm. Right, because it breaks some of that tension, because it really is a tense movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, like I said, I didn't appreciate how tense it was the first couple times I watched it because I was just too young to really appreciate how strong the filmmaking really was.
Like, I actually like Texas Chainsaw is one of those movies where I kind of use it as a marker for a period of time in movie history, not just horror movies but movie history in general. Like, I'll watch a movie and think, oh, this was post Texas Chainsaw Massacre, or this is pre Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And in a way, like, I also do that with Night of the Living Dead. And there are these movies that are milestones in terms of people kind of started making things differently after that point. I watched a movie not long ago that was another satanic horror movie, and I won't say what it is because I want to talk about it later. It was after Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but I felt like it was before, and it's interesting to see other movies catching up to the new precedent set by a certain film. And the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre definitely set a new precedent.
Yeah, it's the rawness of how it was filmed. Like, I think that grain in the original film is to cover up a lot of what they can't afford to make look better. And, like, my restored Blu-ray, I think, actually takes away from some of that tone. But it showed how something raw and unrefined can really get into under an audience's skin. And I think Texas Chainsaw is an example of a lot of happy accidents.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, for sure. And you think about how many slasher movie tropes this movie created, the isolation, the using found items as weapons,
yep,
right? And household items as murder weapons. And the final girl. It's all these tropes sort of came out of this movie.
Yeah, this really precedes the big slasher trend.
Yeah.
As we said, it's going to be another 12 years before they make another one.
Yeah.
And you know, it's also interesting too about how Texas Chainsaw, the original, some of the most frightening scenes happen during the daytime. You know, the one woman tries to run out of the house and Leatherface grabs her and pulls her screaming back inside of the house. There's a lot of movies where traditionally, you know, the scary things happen at night. And in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it's really shot in a way where, combined with the fact that they told people it was based on a real story, you could just really buy it as something that happened, because in movies, bad things only happen at night. But in real life, bad things can happen during the day.
Yeah, that's something that you sparked in my brain, is a lot of this is happening during the day. Does anybody else fucking live here? And if they are they in on this?
Yeah.
Just ignoring the fact that, okay, well, this is what happens there. We don't get involved.
There's this real fear of, you know, you're driving through rural anywhere.
Yeah.
And I don't know about any of you, but I've definitely had a time when, you know, you're driving through a rural area. And like, we all live in Canada. Yeah. Driving through rural Saskatchewan and almost running out of gas. And because of poor planning and being lost, and some places are hard to find, and, you know, whatever the reason, it's really scary to be out in the middle of nowhere and to find yourself in a position where you might be stranded, where you have to go to somebody's house who lives in the middle of nowhere and there's no one else around, and hope that, you know, you can get some help. And that feeling of isolation where, you know, wants to stop that person from doing all this stuff out in the daylight, and no one's around, no one can help you, you know. It could be a cannibal family for all you know.
I've driven those back highways where you drive along it and you don't see another car for 30 minutes.
And I can remember a couple of times where that actually happened to our family, where we'd have to walk up this long driveway to this only house that's around for miles.
It's weird. And sometimes I don't know, like, the thing, something about the daytime, like, after watching this movie, this is one of those things where if I'm driving somewhere, I'll like glance over to farmhouse and be like, I wonder what's going on in there right now.
And you know, even other things too, like there's the iconic creepy sound of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is that camera sound. And that's not necessarily something that's creepy. It's like the sound of a camera. Texas Chainsaw Massacre in some ways really takes things that are part of everyday life and then makes them sinister.
Yeah, I mean, those camera sounds are associated with basically crime scene photos. So suddenly you're attaching an image in your mind to it. So now when you hear it, especially if you've seen this film or even the remake, which uses the exact same sound, it is probably one of the creepiest sounds in the film, because you're associating an image with that sound.
Yeah, you know, literally taking a snapshot in your brain. Yeah.
Like, you hear that sound and forever afterwards you associate it with Texas Chainsaw.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, any last thoughts you guys want to bring up about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, this iconic film?
No, actually, we covered up some stuff that it wasn't even a thought in my brain when we started.
Yeah, me too, actually.
And we kind of rapid-fired it.
Yeah, we totally did, but yeah, I mean, as we were talking, I'm like, wait a minute, there are revelations?
There's a lot to unpack, and generally, we've covered other slasher films, and they're never quite as dense as this one is.
I had a note. I was just going through my notes from before the show.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned earlier, I think in a just world, Rob Zombie would do a remake. Also in a just world, I believe James Franco would be a good person to play a hitchhiker. Because, you know, he's like a weird looking dude, but he also looks like James Franco.
I do have a question for you at the end of the original film. What happened to the guy that was driving the rig that ran away?
That was my question.
I had that same question. Because
they don't, Leatherface stops. They don't show him getting him.
No, they don't. They don't care. They don't show his demise or his escape at all.
Yeah,
he's very much left hanging. Actually, there's one point that bothers me about the remake that I have to bring up, is when she cuts off his fucking arm.
He should have bled out.
They went too far with that. And then, of course, switching the arm that was cut off was also a big mistake.
Oh, you know what? I was actually looking at Daniel Pearl, the cinematographer. I was looking at his IMDb. He also shot AVP Requiem.
Yep.
And there are points in this movie where I can absolutely see it. Specifically, there's a scene during one of the big climactic scenes of Leatherface chasing Jessica Biel, and there is like an edit per second, and it's very rapid fire and hard to follow.
That's a very modern music video way to shoot things.
Like, you can tell that Marcus Nespaul, after doing Texas Chainsaw Massacre, by and large, he mostly did music videos for 20 years.
Yeah.
And, or sorry, not Marcus Nespaul's the director.
No, he's Pearl, got quite a bit in there.
Yeah, both of them had quite a bit of music video experience. Yeah.
It certainly shows. And I'm betting the favorite scene for Trish in the remake is when she drives over Sheriff Hoyt.
How the hell did you know that?
And backs up and then runs over. Oh, it's just one of my favorites.
Yeah.
But from a feminist standpoint, in the strong female protagonist, that is a bitchin' scene.
It is a bitchin' scene. And even with the, like, it's very feminist, but also it's one of those moments where, actually, I was watching it yesterday and she drives over and I'm like, okay, what are you doing? Back up. And she does. And I'm like, it's like the movie was listening to me.
<That's>
I'm
really
like,
great. That's
what you have to do. Like, it seemed the smartest moment.
Initially, when she stops, I'm like, why are you stopping? I'm like, do it. Backs up. Then goes over him again. I'm like, yeah, okay, she's a little broken, a little pissed off, and justifiably so.
and it's, I like that that was some of the uplifting part of the remake, is like, we did have, like, in the original, she does save herself, but really circumstance with that truck, she would have been shit out of luck that didn't come on, but Jessica Biel made this happen.
I did appreciate the comeback around to where she was basically now at that panic point.
Yes, I was going to mention that
Lauren German was when she was picked up as the hitchhiker. You know, she goes in a different direction and she realizes that this truck driver's taking her back to where she just left. Mm-hmm. And having that same reaction. And this,
it was beautifully done.
Yeah, and it's this juxtaposition. It's like, well, one way out is to take that cleverly hidden gun and shoot myself, or let's fuck these people up.
Yep.
Yeah, what did you all think of the ending of the remake, where they go back again to the opening narration, true crime documentary style, where they show, you know, the crime scene video that no one has ever seen.
That was the cheesy jump scare. I'm like, oh man, why'd you do that?
This is the only known photo of Thomas Hewitt.
I didn't like that.
People have known him as Leatherface.
I didn't like it.
No. See, if they did have that, I would like to have had it off screen.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no photo of him.
Yeah.
But, like, I kind of want to know, like, I would like to see something where he doesn't know what to do and he's alone now and he's just lost.
Hey, you know what? Actually, I wanted to bring this up at the very beginning of the podcast, but this is a fun little coincidence. Today, October 14th, the release date of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake was October 17th, 2003. So the 15th anniversary of that movie is a couple days from now.
It's almost like we planned it, but we didn't. We did that with Wreck, I think, as well.
Yeah.
The original was 4th of October, 1974.
Oh, it's almost, oh my goodness, 44 years old?
Yeah.
44 years old?
It is, because I was 4 months old when it came out.
Well, there you go. It was very appropriate to cover it for this All the Horror episode of Invasion of the Remake. We're doing All the Horror all month long, and you can follow a lot of other podcasts that are getting in on All the Horror using that hashtag All the Horror. Can I say All the Horror anymore?
Yes, I can,
because you can also see what podcasts are involved with this month by following at All the Horror 18 on Twitter for all the, 20 plus podcasts that are involved in this crossover.
I've actually lost count of how many are actually involved now.
It's like Crisis on Infinite Podcast.
It's becoming that.
Unprecedented, people. So.
Because we have people coming in, and we've had a couple that had to drop out for personal reasons, but we've had more than enough interest that now we're well over 20.
It's Hydra cut off one head to come to take its place.
Now, I personally would be very interested. People who are fans of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre franchise, if you were to let us know where you would rank all of these movies, I think that would be really interesting.
Yeah, go ahead and tell us on Twitter, and you can do that at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and invasiontheremake@gmail.com if you want to rank your Texas Chainsaw Massacres. I can kind of guess which one's going to be at the end of that as far as the worst and the best.
Texas Chainsaw is one of those franchises where you pretty much can guess universally which one will be number one on everyone's lists and which one will be the last. But
it's the middle.
I feel like a lot of people can make arguments for every single other one of those movies.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah, and I mean, if the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre isn't number one, don't bother.
What are you doing? If you haven't yet, definitely check out, if you're a new fan to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, maybe you've only seen the first one, maybe you've only seen the remake, I highly recommend checking out Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 and the underrated Leatherface Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3 with Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah, see, Texas Chainsaw, there's some big names that came out of that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could say that about horror franchises in general, so, some of these older ones and who's come out of them in the long run. So, I mean, Laura German's been on several seasons now of Lucifer. So, and she had just a bit part in the film.
A very iconic, but bit part, yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, she initially went out for the lead part, but I think she got a very memorable role in that film.
I don't think anyone certainly would ever forget that scene if you've seen
it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you don't forget that. Don't forget that scene. Actually, one more point. We were discussing this before where they were coming back from Mexico. And that's why they were going through Texas, because they were buying some pot down in Mexico in a piñata.
Yeah.
Going to a concert.
Going to see Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yeah.
So, hey, I heard that there's this song that's coming out in a year, but we are hearing it on the radio. It's called Sweet Home Alabama. Yeah. It's going to be really good.
See, what I like...
It's funny that they still tour and there's only like one member that's still alive.
But I don't know. I liked the fact that it wasn't, they weren't going to check on Grandpa's grave, but circumstance, just simply being on that road, was all it was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That makes it just seem so much more horrific.
You know, and a positive thing I'll say about the remake, even though there are a lot of failings, like it's definitely a flawed movie, but I think that the script and the writing is actually pretty good. I think that in terms of a remake,
the original's flawed as well.
Yeah, like the original is great, and for writing a remake of something so iconic, I think that they went in some interesting directions, and I think that they really tried to think outside of the box in some ways, and I really appreciated it.
Yeah, I think for trying something different, I think they were more successful than some of the other remakes that we've had over the years.
For sure.
And that we've covered on this show. I think they were more successful than Nightmare on Elm Street was.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
If I hadn't known this was a remake, and it never, and if it wasn't a Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie, I would have, this would stand out as a pretty decent horror, just in general. Yeah.
It's like a pretty good, especially among early 2000s slashers. It's pretty decent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just having that remake tag on it. That's what kind of drops it down a little bit.
I think the failing of the franchise as well after number three is they do keep going back to the same well of these kids wander onto their property and then they get murdered, and it's like,
you know, actually
they have
Chainsaw
one official
3D,
remake, but
like
there's
Texas Chainsaw 3D and Leatherface, like both really try to go, well, like both of those really try to go out of their way to do something different, which I really appreciate.
Yeah,
because 3D kind of starts off that way, but it goes in a completely different direction.
Well, that's good.
I know a lot of people seem to really hate it, but that one and the new Leatherface, while also being flawed, I do really appreciate when people try to take something like Texas Chainsaw and really try to go in a different direction.
Generally horror, if it hits like a 50% mark, that's doing pretty good.
Yeah.
And most of these Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies do, with the exception of the fourth one, The New Beginning,
or the next generation,
I should say. Yeah, The Next Generation.
It's like a bad title, the bad movie.
I just kept waiting for Patrick Stewart to be Grandpa.
Yeah.
Rough.
Yeah. All right. Well, how about the podcast, guys? Don't be that lone stranger on a empty back road. you can hitch a ride with us. We're fine. We won't do anything bad to you. And you can tell other people how to find the show and find us. We are in a ton of different places. We are, of course, on our host site, Libsyn, as well as iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Stitcher, Player FM, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and
freaking YouTube.
Yeah. And of course, we're in a ton of different places. Just look for Invasion of the Remake on your favorite podcast provider, and chances are we're there. So
we're pretty hard not to find.
Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and share us out on your social media and help spread the invasion. Now, we'll be back next week with our final addition to All the Horror with some guests again coming in. I'm not going to tell you what that movie is, but we got some exciting stuff for that particular episode. We'll carry on the horror stuff into November, and we will finish off with our 31 Days of Horror specials once we've actually got to view them all.
Yeah, we're only about halfway through now.
And by that point, we'll be knocking on the door of Christmas stuff. So we'll be getting close to the end of the season, but we'll take a break from the horror after November. And
we're like a Treehouse of Horror. The horror special is always in November.
Well, we do. We trickle in horror all year long, but this is when we go crazy with it.
Mm-hmm.
And
traumatize ourselves every year.
Yeah, we look forward to it. Usually by August, we're getting the shakes. We're like, we could cover one now, but we're so close now.
But then we forget that every year around, like, you know, maybe between the 15th and the 20th, you're like going, what's wrong with me? Something's terrible is happening. Why am I so desensitized? Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to getting past the movie portion of watching movies, because they just dropped The House on Haunted Hill on Netflix, and I can't wait to watch that.
Same here.
And I'm still kind of working my way through The Purge over on Amazon Prime as well, the TV series for that. So there's still lots of great horror to watch as far as serialized television goes. Yeah. So I can get my fill in other things, but I got to watch the movie stuff first.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, because TV don't count.
This 31 Days of Horror challenge, you really don't factor in all your favorite TV shows. You have to kind of deprioritize for the month.
I do. Yeah. And there's stuff I want to watch, but I'm like, well, okay, they're gonna have to hold off for a couple of weeks. And Doctor Who started too. I am sneaking that one in right now.
But. And you know, also Riverdale. I might be the only Riverdale fan here, but
yeah,
I think so. Yeah.
Maybe. Riverdale just started, and you know, no spoilers for anyone who's listening, but oh my goodness, the season 3 premiere was just batshit crazy.
Well, and Netflix is going to be premiering, I think by the time you hear this, it'll be out. The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina will be hitting Netflix.
Yeah, I think it's after. I think it's the 22nd or 23rd.
Yeah, so near the end of the month here is...
well, I'm going to go back to the Melissa Joan Hart stupid ones, which I love.
You know, these new ones are going to be great.
I think so, too. Well, till next week, I've been Jason.
I am always Sam.
I continue to be Trish.
And I always return as Jeff.
Jeff 3.0. We are out of here.
Look, we're just looking for our friend, all right? Then we'll be out of here.
You ain't running things, boy. Except in your mouth.
This is crazy.
Turd. You're so dead you don't even know it.